Okay, good evening everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Master the Art of Persuasion. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now I'll be introducing our very special guest, Jim Fortin, but before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Jim a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in by you, our listeners, through the website. Now, I thought a call on persuasion was a really important part of the People You Should Meet program, given the fact that most of us have daily interactions with other human beings. I think the whole subject of influence and persuasion and being a really effective communicator is actually of paramount importance to be a really effective human being, and I think it's a really, really important part of our program. Now, we're very, very fortunate to have Jim actually share his wisdom on the topic. He's a world-renowned and world-regarded expert on persuasion and influence. He is a mind authority expert, a master NLP practitioner, and also a master hypnotist. Jim has also trained thousands of speakers and quite a lot of the most prominent speakers in the world to actually be more influential and more persuasive when they're actually addressing audiences. So it gives me a great pleasure to welcome to the call our very special guest, Jim Fortin. How are you doing there, Jim?
Hey, Damien. How are you? Thank you for the invite.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, I actually thought I'd just start you off at the top, Jim. And as I mentioned in the introduction, like, you are a world-renowned expert in the whole area of influence and persuasion.
Correct.
And one thing I didn't mention, actually, is that you've actually also created this whole new body of work called Neuropersuasion.
Correct.
And I was just wondering if you could actually share for our listeners at home what exactly neuropersuasion is.
Sure, Damien. I'd love to. Neuropersuasion is basically brain persuasion. What I've done is I've trademarked the phrase neuropersuasion, which is brain persuasion. Damien, what most people miss is that something has to happen in the brain for people to be convinced to buy. Something has to happen in terms of people's mental patterns, their blueprints, their strategies. Something has to click, and in many times it's a sequence of things, or what I call strategies, have to happen in the brain of your prospect or your client or the person that you're trying to get to do something. A series of things have to happen unconsciously for them to say, yes, I'm on board with you. So what I've done is I've taken the best of the best that I could find from clinical hypnotic language patterns, neuro research, which was done for many years by Robert Cialdini here in the States, and neurolinguistic programming. And then I've distilled it all down into patterns that people can use immediately to understand how people are thinking so that they can influence people to a win-win outcome.
Great. And how did you actually, I guess, on your own personal journey, why has persuasion been such an important thing for you, and how did you become inspired to actually master this field?
That's a great question. Years ago, I worked at the Hypnosis Institute in New York City. And one of my clients said to me one time, he said, you know, Jim, I came in initially for smoking cessation. Now I'm coming in for other things that I'm working on in terms of behavioral change. And he goes, how is it that I just listen to you? I can hear you talking the whole time. How is it that I just listen to you and I change? What happens in my mind? And he said, you know, you must be using some kind of patterns, right? Some kind of, you know, some things that you're saying to me must have an effect on me unconsciously, right? And I said, well, of course. And he said, well, I'm in sales. Can you teach me how to use these very same patterns to influence people? So what I started doing is I started mapping over actual hypnotic patterns that I would use with hypnosis clients. I started mapping those patterns over and started applying them to things that people would deal with in the business world, meaning answering objections or different things that would come up in sales interactions or marketing or advertising. So I literally mapped over as much as I possibly could that made sense and that was easy to understand, clinical hypnotic language patterns and some neuro-linguistic patterns, and then I've distilled them down into a basic selling model for people. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Now, I guess the next question that actually springs to mind is, like, it's obvious that you have a great passion for this field and years of study in it. And I was just wondering for people listening at home who may have never been exposed to hypnosis or NLP, to actually master the art of persuasion, do you really need to be born with special talents, or can anyone do this?
You know, that's a good question. And, you know, people have asked me that before. And there's kind of a two-part answer to that, Damien. First off, you've always got people, you know, you've got some people who are more charismatic than others, and that's just inborn, that's just natural. So these skills, I'm not going to say they're going to come easier to people that are more charismatic, or they have an easier time influencing people just by their natural energy. Anyone can learn these skills, because what I teach is, again, it's very foundational when it comes to neurolinguistic programming. I teach certain things like mirroring and pacing and leading, which are things that many people think they understand, and they truly, I've had many people say, oh, I understand that, I learned that years ago, yet they can't demonstrate it. So anyone can learn the skills. They're very, very basic things that I teach people. Actually, even the hypnotic patterns that I teach, with the exception of one or two, most of them are just one-line techniques that I teach people to say in certain situations when they want to create different outcomes. So to answer your question, yes, anyone can learn these, and it's very easy to do.
Great. The other question I had as well, we actually titled up the call the Master the Art of Persuasion, and I was just wondering, does science actually have a place to play in persuasion? Like you mentioned actually mapping across all the different hypnotic language patterns to the world of business, so is there a scientific element to this as well?
Absolutely, there's a scientific element. As a matter of fact, the word neuropersuasion that I trademarked last year, I started thinking about a book that a student mentioned to me about a year ago here in the States. It's called Biology, B-U-Y-O-L-O-G-Y, which is a great name, biology, meaning what happens in the brain to get us to buy? What things have to happen up there? And there's been years of research that have demonstrated that through conditioning, people are making their decisions unconsciously to buy before they're even consciously aware they are making the decision. So, you know, advertisers are looking at this now. How can we influence people below their level of conscious awareness? So that's one aspect of it. The other is when I mentioned neuro research, which is Robert Cialdini. He's written two books. One is called Influence, which is a big, big book here in the States. And the other is called something like, Yes, 50 Scientifically Proven Ways to Influence People. And all of his work, 30 years of work, is all about university research and what drives human behavior. And, you know, he's done, you know, all the rigorous university, you know, standards and testing and all this to make sure that his research is accurate. But this part of it is all scientific and validated by many years of research. So, yes, it is an art and a science. It's, you know, for years, many people thought persuasion was simply an art. Influence was an art. They are an art, yet there is a science behind the art. It's a very good question.
Yeah, no, I actually can totally vouch for Cialdini's work as well. Like, that was certainly one of the books that got me interested in this whole field as well.
Well, if you look at a lot of Internet marketers, Damien, a lot of Internet marketers will use the six Cialdini principles that drive human behavior, which are reciprocity, commitment and consistency, social proof, authority, liking, and scarcity. And if you look at a lot of web copy, they will use those very same principles, which have been scientifically validated, to move people through their websites to get all the way to the bottom to click on that little buy button at the bottom.
Absolutely. Great. Now, I mentioned in the intro as well, Jim, that you've actually trained, mentored, and coached some of the best speakers in the business. And I was just wondering if there, I guess in the world of persuasion, are there important components, first of all, that people need to be aware of when they're actually selling to people or influencing people one-to-one versus, say, people actually selling something from the stage?
That's a good question, and that's actually very interesting, in that what I teach predominantly is directed for one-to-one, meaning, you know, the in-person sales process, persuasion, and influencing process. When I sell from the front of the room, my closing ratio, which is a very high closing ratio in the industry, you know, generally speaking, my closing ratio from the front of the room is generally about 30 to 35%. That's pretty high.
That's
pretty high for a closer in the front of the room, and that's because I'm constantly, all during the presentation, creating expectation and then actually laying hypnotic suggestions all through the presentation about what they're going to find. I'm engaging and I'm exciting their imagination and moving their imagination all through the process to get them to the bottom line, meaning go to the back of the room and register. When it comes to one-to-one, and actually Cialdini's research demonstrates this, one of the six things that I mentioned a while ago that drives human behavior is liking of the six things that have been demonstrated. Now think about this. We, and this is universal, we like to buy from people that we like. And you know what? When we want to buy something, even if we're not sure we want to buy that thing, but we really like the person, we'll start making up reasons in our mind why we want to buy from that person. And this is what a lot of people miss in sales and personal interaction. I just see this time and time and time again. It's not about being liked, which is what most people attempt to do. I see many salespeople doing things that create what I call unlikability. Now, what I mean by that is they're not aware of what they're doing in the sales process. And let's say, for example, and this I'm just making this up, but this is an example. Let's say that I'm a person who doesn't like to be touched, okay? And there are people like that in the world. So let's say that I'm that kind of person, and in the sales process, you keep touching me. Well, you keep breaking rapport with the person that you keep touching should you do something like that. So liking is fundamental, and that all comes down to one thing when it comes to persuasion and influence. And this is something that I posted on Facebook a couple of days ago. It was by Aristotle, and that he said that he believed the majority of persuasion and influence came down to character. What I think it comes down to is authenticity. How authentic are you with people? Because people can unconsciously read, and they can read energetically, how authentic you're being with them in the sales process. So to answer your question, that was a long-winded explanation and vital. People have got to be genuine, and they've got to be authentic when they're engaging people in a process of purchasing a product or a service.
Absolutely.
Yeah, one-to-one. It's so vital people get that. And I think out of everything in the course, that and intent. What do you intend to happen in that process? What do you intend for your prospect and your client? And candidly, your intent, and I use the operator, the modal operator should, your intent should be, which is my belief system, that you want the best for that person. You want them to have whatever it is that you know is going to get them to a higher state in life. So intent and relationship.
So Jim, just using a little bit of scenario analysis, if you were to meet with a new prospect or a new potential client or customer, would you actually set a specific intent linked into that customer each and every time you go to meet someone?
Yes, absolutely, Damien. And you know, what's interesting is I've never read the book, and it's become a worldwide sensation, the book called The Secret, you know? Mm. And, you know, I followed, you know, studied and followed energy for years. And there was a book written many, many, many years ago. No one knows when it was written. It's called The Kybalion, Kybalion. And it's got the seven universal laws. And the first chapter in The Kybalion is about the universal mind. Everything is the all, which, you know, Jung 100 years ago called the collective unconscious. So the question is what intent do you have for that prospect or client before you meet them? Is your intent to close a sale because you've got to meet your monthly sales goals? Is your intent to be of service to them? Is your intent to sell them something or to get them to buy something? And I think out of everything in my program, I think that is the most vital. And, you know, people always, they want the flashy stuff. They always want the hypnotic closing lines and the patterns and all those kind of exciting things. I think the most vital thing is what is your intent before you go to that prospect or to that client? Because they're picking up on that at some level of consciousness, and they know your intent. That's why, you know, when someone's trying to sell you, you can feel it. I mean, you can obviously see it, but you just know something's off, and you're not sure that you want to follow through with the transaction. So intent is vital. For me, it's also all about service. You know, how can you serve? And I mean that very, very seriously. How can you serve that client? I think that's just vital.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Now, another thing I wanted to pick up on as well, Jim, was you were talking about actually working through your sales presentation, and like a big element of that was actually exciting the imagination.
Uh-huh.
Now, the imagination is a very right brain-oriented activity, and I was just wondering, like, is it actually important to know which part of the brain you're trying to interact with in the sales process?
I love the fact that you ask that question. There are a couple, if you were to get online, there are a couple of other persuasion and influencing skills programs out there. And I haven't seen all of them. There's probably only four or five total that I've seen here in the States. What I haven't seen any of them fully hit on is moving the imagination. You know, when I conduct live presentations, and I've always got my audience traditionally are entrepreneurs and traditional salespeople. And my audiences will say, and my students will say, you know, Jim, and these are all American courses, I've been to Sandler and Miller Hyman and Bosworth and Spin Selling and Consultative Selling and Brian Tracy and Zig Ziglar, and how come they're not teaching the things that you're teaching? Your stuff makes more sense. They've never taught me these things before. Those programs are all about why people buy. What I teach is how people buy, meaning what goes on in the brain. Now, this is a question I ask my audiences. I'll say, okay, you know, you guys have all been taught to sell on what? It starts with an E. And they'll all say, oh, emotion. Okay, and then I ask them, what moves emotion? And they can never tell me. So, you know, let me ask you, what moves people's emotions?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, if everyone's selling on emotions, right? That's what, you know, I had a guy a couple of days ago on Facebook said, hey, I listened to this program and it said sell to people's emotions. So if everyone's taught to sell to emotions, what moves emotions? And that answer is imagination.
Mm.
Imagination moves emotions. Think about this. You never see someone that's crying or smiling. You know, someone's crying. They never say, you know, I've got an emotion. Why am I crying? They first had to imagine something before they could get into the emotion. The imagination created the emotion. So when you want to move people, you move their imagination first because that moves their emotions, and then it trickles over into left brain analysis, which everyone and most, when I say everyone, many people have been taught to sell left brain, meaning features and benefits and statistics and all these reasons that people should buy. That's not what people buy. What they buy is what they imagine about those things. You know, I tell my students, you look at some of the most influential people in history, and I'll say, hey, folks, who are the most influential people in history? And I'll always hear Hitler, Gandhi, Churchill, Anwar Sadat, Martin Luther King. Notice that these speakers, what they did is they never said, hey, let me tell you all the features and benefits and all the reasons why you should follow me. No, what they did is they excited and they engaged the imagination. And when you move the imagination, then you move people. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Let me add one more thing there. Very simple here. I know, you know, listeners are probably saying, okay, Jim, this is great and it makes a lot of sense to me. How do I move the imagination? It's really simple. When you use these two words that I'm going to share with you, you will shift someone from left brain to right brain. This is what you do. When you want them to be engaged with your features and benefits or whatever it is that you want them to do, you say this. You say, just imagine. And then whatever it is you want them to imagine. Because they must shift from left brain to right brain. When you do that, you will start engaging the imagination and you will move people a whole lot quicker. And it's so funny because I watch my students, and I listen to my students, and they're like, you know, when I learned that, now I'm seeing that in advertising, and I'm seeing it in different places, and you're so right that they got me to start imagining, and I didn't even realize that I was imagining. I wasn't thinking. I was imagining at first before I was thinking about the features and benefits. So, you know, to all the listeners, when you want to engage someone, go out and try it later today. You will get results. What you want to say to someone is this, just imagine blank. And then whatever it is you want them to imagine. And notice you will engage them. Powerful.
Excellent. I love that line. I wasn't thinking, I was imagining.
Exactly.
Now, Jim, with the whole world of NLP, they spend a lot of time talking about modalities, whether it be visual modality, the audio modality, or the kinesthetic. Now, in terms of drawing those different modalities into imagination, if someone has a bias or a preference for any of the five different sensory modalities, like, do you actually integrate those as well in terms of creating imagination, or
will that just fire off automatically? I kick the door open for people and then let their brain handle it and process it in the way that their brain wants to process it. What I mean by that is there's been research done you know, they've said 65, 25, 10, meaning 65% of the population is predominantly visual, 25% is predominantly auditory, 10% is predominantly kinesthetic. There's some questions about how accurate that actually is. Yet we do know that the majority of the population is predominantly, when you talk about modalities, predominantly visual. And you'll hear visual people say things like, just imagine, and or just, they'll say, I can't visualize it. I'm sorry. They'll say, you know, I can't visualize it. I'm drawing a picture in my mind. Okay, so talking about modalities, what everyone can do is everyone can imagine, because they will imagine it immediately and automatically in their own modality. So that's why I tell people, and I don't have hypnosis clients anymore, but when I did, I would never say, I want you to visualize. I would say, just imagine. Just let yourself imagine. And that's the reason also, you know, you talk about the visual part of that. Research demonstrates that when it comes to reading things on websites, and my numbers are off by a few percentage points, but they're close. Something like 65% of people will watch an entire video on a website, yet only 27% will read the entire, you know, these really long sales letters on a website, you know. We love to be engaged visually. I mean, the mind, that's just the way the mind works. That's why children like cartoons. The mind loves that animation. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Good.
Now, one of the things we mentioned in the promo was that 95% of people actually make their decisions unconsciously or at an unconscious level. I was just wondering if you could actually go into that a little bit more as well, Jim.
Okay, let's reverse that. Instead of saying 95% of people, let's say that all people, and research has already demonstrated this, all people make their decisions unconsciously. For example, let's say, and this is vital that people get this, let's say that you do not like lima beans, okay? And you haven't eaten lima beans in 15 years. That's a big thing in the States for kids, Brussels sprouts and lima beans. So let's say that you do not like lima beans. So if I came and I put a bowl of lima beans in front of you, would you look at those lima beans and say, would I eat lima beans today or not? Absolutely not, because that decision has already been made at some time in the past, right? Whether you will or whether you won't.
Mm.
So the thing is that almost every decision, when I say almost, pretty much every decision that someone makes right now consciously has already been precipitated unconsciously. For example, I do not like snakes, okay? So if I were to walk outside and see a snake, I wouldn't look at a snake and say, do I like snakes today or do I not like snakes? What do I think about that snake? No, I would run the opposite direction right away because I already know, it's just unconscious, it's ingrained in me, I do not like snakes. So the point of that is that when people are making decisions, those decisions are already preceded by their unconscious filters, by their unconscious blueprints. Now, the unfortunate thing about that, and there's nothing that any of us can do about that, is that people are also making decisions about other people based upon people they knew in their past. And that could be everything from smells. You know, smells or somebody's look. You know, if you had an old girlfriend and she wore a particular perfume, and then you hadn't seen her for years, and then you saw somebody several years later, and they were wearing that same perfume, you would automatically think of the old girlfriend, right?
Mm.
That's called a neural associative condition. So people have all kind of things tied to you unconsciously from their past. And there's nothing you can do about those things. You've just got to go out and do what you're going to do in the world. Yet that is the reality of it.
Absolutely. I know lots of people, they may have music as a real anchor or trigger point for relationships. It could be in a movie or at a special time in their life when they were actually connecting in that relationship. And whenever they hear that track, bang, they're instantly taken back to that moment.
Women always say it's called a neural associative condition, and that's actually something that I teach people to do in my program, is how to associate your product or service to the identity of the person that's buying it. Okay. Let me back up here, though. It's called a neural associative condition. And that it's like Pavlov's bell. You know, he would ring the bell and the dog would salivate. You know, women invariably say when they get married, you know, they'll have a wedding song, the first song they dance to. You know, that's a custom here in the States. So years later, women will hear this song and the first thing they will think is, oh, that's our wedding song. You know, that's the song they played at our wedding. There's no analytical thought of, again, where did I hear that song? Do I like that song today? You know, I've heard that song. No, not at all. It's all unconscious. And also, one step further, is people are constantly linking things because the brain links information. They're constantly linking things to your product or service. And many companies, even in advertising, do it in a very negative way. You know, I was watching this TV commercial here in the States, and I don't want to mention the name, it was a very large insurance company. And they had this very, very sweaty guy, and he was probably 80 pounds overweight, and they did this intentionally. And he was all sweaty. He had sweat all over his body, okay? And you could even kind of, you know, metaphorically, you could smell him on the TV. It was gross, okay? So the thing was, I wanted to click this channel right away and get off from this channel because that was a negative association for me. I mean, I don't know who that'd be a positive association for. So they were negatively associating this guy to their product or service. Now every time I think of their product or service, I think of that smelly, stinky guy. Mm. Make sense?
Absolutely.
So, you know, be careful what you're associating. And it's simple things. I went to a restaurant recently, and it was very hot when I walked in. It was a lunchtime crowd, and they opened for lunch. They opened like, 10:30, 11 in the morning, and they didn't have their air conditioners on. So when I walked in, it was hot. Now every time I drive by that restaurant, what do I think? Oh, there's that hot restaurant. They created a negative state and a negative association in me. So be careful what you're associating to your business. Vital, because once people make those associations, for most people, they're going to stick.
Mm. Excellent. Now, this one is just a question about the kind of people you work with. I was just wondering if you had or could give people a feel for the kind of people you work with, first of all, and then maybe if you had some stories about some successes people have had applying these methodologies.
Absolutely. How do I answer that? I'm thinking here. My target market generally are people that are entrepreneurs or people that are traditional salespeople, meaning, you know, they work for large corporations and they've sold for many years, and their entire livelihood depends on them selling and moving people to action, okay? So my expertise, I know quite a bit about it, though it's not what I do, for example, is moving product on the Internet. Other people are already handling that. Again, mine's more one-to-one. How can I help you become more influential in one-to-one business situations? So that's my target market, and what I do with these people is in my whole day program and in the audio program is I go through and I teach them the whole foundation of what persuasion is, what it's not, how to become more influential with people, and then I teach individual unconscious hypnotic language patterns. Let me give you a good one right now, and actually this is one of my favorite ones, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We separate ourselves into camps of us and them, and we look at the world as us and them. You look at religions, they do that. You look at governments, they do that. You look at sports teams, okay? Look at New Zealand and Australia. It's us and it's them, okay? So we unconsciously identify with things. Now, what you want to do is you want to, because I'm going to teach the listeners a technique, and then we'll talk about success with this. What you want to do is you want to link the identity of your prospect or your client to your product or your service. And there's one line here that I'm going to give you to do that. Now, think about this. When you buy things, for example, your identity is, you may be a person who values price, or you could be a person who values and you want value, or you could be a person who looks for name brand, or a person who looks for serviceability or customer service or whatever it is. And you also have a criteria of that in your mind, meaning if I said, you know, Damien, what do you like most, price, value, convenience, name brand, or durability? You're going to rank those in your mind, aren't you?
Mm.
Okay. So as you're listening to people, people will say things in the sales process, and we're all selling all day long, by the way. Everyone is in sales, whether you're selling ideas or you're selling products or you're selling services or you're selling coaching, whatever it is, everyone is selling. But people will say things invariably, and you'll hear this all the time. People will say things like, I am the kind of person who likes great value. You've heard people say things like that before, right? So when they say that, that is their identity. So what you do later in the sales process, I don't like the word close. Many traditional sales programs talk about closing. You're actually closing before you ever even start the interaction, because those people are making unconscious evaluations about you before you ever even open your mouth through associations. So what I tell people is this. When you're ready to get them to sign on the dotted line, before that, this is what you say. So for me, back up here, Damien, tell me something that you look for. If you were to buy a car, what would you say the most important thing in a car would be to you?
Probably in the UK, there would be just something that was compact, actually, like something that was easy to park
okay.
and easy to run around town with.
Convenience, right?
Convenience.
Okay. So if I said, Damien, if you're the kind of guy who likes convenience, then you're going to love this car. Okay, because, see, I already know you're the kind of guy who likes convenience, right?
Right.
So when I say, if you're the kind, the exact phrase is, Damien, if you're the kind of person who likes convenience, then you're going to love this car, which is a car that I'm attempting to sell you. What I've done is I have linked the first part, if you're the kind of guy, because, see, you already know you're that kind of guy, right?
Right.
So when I say, if you're the kind of guy who likes convenience, which I know is true, because that is your identity, because you've told me, I'm going to link that to the outcome. Then you're going to love this car. Mm. So when people tell you things, for example, and see, that's, you see how that's unconscious? Because you do not argue with yourself saying, am I the kind of person who likes value or convenience or not? No. It automatically goes right to your identity, and you buy into it automatically because that is who you are. Therefore, I am selling to who you are. I'm selling to your identity. Make sense?
Absolutely.
Success with that, I've had many students. One of my students a while back sent me a text, and he goes, I went from almost losing a sale. The guy said, it was Friday afternoon, and he said, okay, Troy, we really like what you have to say, and we're going to talk to some other vendors on Monday. And Troy said, if you're the kind of guy who wants the best marketing firm in Dallas, then you're going to want to look at what we have. And the guy went from saying, okay, we're going to look at more vendors, to, okay, let's set up an appointment and move forward with you folks, all right? So that's
amazing.
The kind of success, and that's one technique out of many that I teach, but that happens all the time. You know, I tell my students, for example, listening to me now, if you're the kind of person who wants to make more money, then you're going to want to learn what I have to share with you. What was the outcome? Mm-hmm. I wanted them to learn what I had to share, but I tied it to, if you're the kind of person who wants to make more money. Make sense?
Very, very powerful.
Yeah, I ask that a lot, by the way. Makes sense. So, okay, good, good. Perfect.
Awesome. That's some great tips in there. Now, Jim, I mentioned that we've had questions come in from around the world, and I was just wondering if I could ask you a few of those questions now.
Please do.
Okay. Now, the first one I'm going to ask is a question from Alan in the UK. So Alan actually asks, I am concerned about the word persuasion. How is this a win-win outcome?
Okay. Damien, I know, because I know you through Facebook, that's how we met, right?
Yep.
And I know that you have a girlfriend that you went to see in Greece this summer, right?
Yep.
Okay. Before you started dating her, the first date that you went on, do you remember that date?
I do.
Okay. Did you go to the date in an old raggedy T-shirt and unshaven and old raggedy clothes, or did you take a shower, clean up, get a haircut, and go and present yourself as best as you could?
Yeah, I did. I gave it everything.
You probably even, like, cleaned your apartment or your car or whatever, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, the point is that you were attempting to persuade her. You wanted to influence her thought about you, didn't you? Right?
Mm.
In a positive way. We're constantly going through our days persuading and influencing people. The key is people say, well, okay, and I'm going to come back to what you're asking, Damien. People say, well, if this is all unconscious, how ethical is it? This is what I tell people. There are no unethical techniques and strategies, only unethical users. So use what you learn ethically. Use what you learn for a win-win situation. When I teach my full-day class here in Dallas, I have people sign, all my students, they sign an agreement saying that they will only use the information to lead people to an ethical win-win situation, period. And I'm a firm believer in karma. I can't control what you do when you leave the training, though you've signed an agreement. I still can't control what you do. I'm a firm believer in karma. You use these skills to go out and take money out of someone else's pocket. You know what? The universe is going to take that money right back out of your pocket somewhere else. So, you know, it only serves you well to use the skills ethically because you create more abundance and prosperity for other people, which means you create more for yourself. So my answer to Alan's question is, there are no unethical techniques, only unethical users. By the way, your girlfriend, when you picked her up, did you tell her that, hey, you know, I wanted to impress you on this date? I showered, I shave, I got a haircut, I bought a new shirt, and I cleaned my car. Did you tell her that?
No, I didn't. But,
then it's below the level of conscious awareness, isn't it? Because you didn't tell her. So she's not conscious of that because you didn't tell her. And the same thing with what I'm teaching you folks now.
So literally we're all persuading pretty much all of the time in our everyday interactions with everyone, really.
Yeah, and you know, people listening, think about your days. Think about all the things that you're persuading people to do. You're persuading people to go to the market, go to the movies. You're persuading people to pick you up from the airport, take out the trash, pick up your clothes, sign on the dotted line, meet me Tuesday at 3 p.m. We are constantly, that is the way of life. Look at the world. We are constantly persuading and influencing people all day long. I want to back up there. Something I start my program with is that the only thing that you will ever get paid for is your ability to persuade and influence other people, nothing else. So to answer your question, yes, our days are full of persuasion from the time we get up to the time we go to bed.
Absolutely. Cool. That's a great answer. Now, this actually comes from Rob in the United States. And Rob asks, Jim, can neuropersuasion be used on oneself to help with self-limiting beliefs? And Phil from Sweden had a very similar question.
What's interesting is something that I teach in my course, and that's a good question from both of them. Something that I teach in my program is what Gregory Bateson came up with years ago called the logical level. Now, I've noticed in a couple of other training courses, they will touch on beliefs, meaning what do you believe about your ability to become more effective? What do you believe about your ability to become more persuasive? I take it a step beyond that. So this is, you know, an answer to these questions here is about limiting beliefs. What precedes limiting beliefs is identity. Emerson once said, we can only say, you know, he said, you can only say what you are. So when these individuals are talking about limiting belief systems, talking about, you know, I don't want to do this or I don't want to do that, what we have to realize is that we can only do in the world what we are. We do what we are. And people will say things, well, okay, Jim, if I've got unconscious beliefs and they're unconscious, how do I know what they are? It's really easy. Look at your environment, because your environment is your beliefs objectified. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
First step to the second step is how can, you know, you would ask about how can we use neuropersuasion, which now my whole course is about persuasion and influence for influencing other people, yet we also go through our days trying to persuade and influence ourselves to do things, right? Mm. You know, go to a dinner you don't want to go to, or get up off the couch, or go to the gym, or not to eat Cheetos and Doritos and hamburgers, you know? We're constantly persuading ourselves. So this is what I tell people, and if you have a pencil and paper with you, everyone write this down. The personality works like an onion, okay? And the biggest mistake that most people make, and what I'm about to tell you is extremely, extremely powerful. The biggest mistake that most people make is that they start at the wrong end of the equation when they try to create change in life. Let's look at the beginning of the year. What happens to health clubs and gyms at the beginning of the year, January?
Big drop, yeah.
Yeah, people rush for membership, right?
Mm.
And then what happens in February and March? All these people stop going. Because, see, people want to change their lives. And what they do, again, they start at the wrong end of the equation because they start to change their environment, which means the shape of their body, by changing their behavior. And they think, well, you know what? If I change my behavior and I go to the gym, guess what? I'm going to get the body that I want, and I'm going to be sexy and trim and fit and healthy and all these kind of things, and I'm going to look good in the bathing suit. Well, let's take it a step further. So you got your environment, which is, put that at the top of the page. And then right below that is behaviors, because your behaviors create your environment. Right below behaviors, you have, it's like a ladder. Right below behaviors, you have self-talk, meaning we talk to ourselves about our behaviors. Right below our self-talk, we have beliefs, meaning we only talk to ourselves about what we believe. What we talk to ourselves is about what we do, and what we do is what we create, okay? Now, the bottom rung of the ladder is this, and this is vital, is identity, because we only believe who we identify as being, and we only talk to ourselves about what we believe, and we only do what we talk to ourselves about, and we create what we do. So it goes from the bottom of the ladder to the top. It goes from identity to beliefs to self-talk to behaviors to environment. So in answer to these questions, when you want to change something in your life, the wrong end of the equation to start at is to change your environment. Because, Damien, I know you've seen women do this, and it's universal. They say, you know what? It's Friday, and I'm going to go on a diet on Monday. And what they do is Saturday they're eating all the junk foods, you know, the ice cream and the cookies. And then Sunday they're cleaning out all the cabinets, right, getting rid of all the junk food in the house. We've seen this, right? And then Monday they're talking to themselves, I'm proud, I'm on a diet, I feel good about myself. Tuesday they're feeling good. Wednesday they're like, wow, I've been pretty good for 3 days. Thursday they're like, you know, I've been good for 4 days now. I can have a little bit of those appetizers at lunch. And then Friday they say, you know what? I've been good all week. I'm going to have a hamburger today. And then Saturday, where are they? They're back into their old ruts again because they started at the wrong level. You've got to start at the level of identity. I'll tell you how to do that very quickly. Let me ask you, Damien, I didn't buy any cigarettes this morning. What do you think would cause that? I didn't buy a pack of cigarettes at all today.
It not being part of your identity.
I'm not a smoker. Why would you don't do? Yeah, you don't do what you do not identify with. So back to those questions again. People are doing those things that they're talking about doing and not doing because they identify with being the kind of person who does those things. So to chuck it all the way back again to the core of the onion, start at the level of your identity, and that is two words. In my mind, the two most powerful words that I've ever heard. Rene Descartes said, "I think." Therefore, I am. So what do you think that you are? Because remember the person said, well, you know, how can I not do things and how can I stop, you know, the person was talking, the question was about limiting beliefs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which the person really wasn't talking about limiting beliefs. What they were talking about is the results they're getting in their external environment. That's what they're fighting against, the environment. Go back to the identity. I am blank, because whatever you talk to yourself about being is what you become. And talking about neuropersuasion, think about a person who tells a lie. They tell the lie, tell the lie, tell the lie. Never do they consciously say, hey, you know, I'm going to tell a lie today. And then tomorrow, they don't say, you know, I'm going to tell a lie. Do I believe this lie or not yet? No. They tell the lie and tell the lie and tell the lie, and eventually it becomes unconsciously ingrained. So the more that you talk to yourself about I am this or that, even though self-talk is in the middle of a ladder, the more you talk to yourself about something, the more you program your identity. So be careful what you put after I am. I am blank is what you will become. I took a little time on that because that is so vital that people understand that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That's one of the best descriptions that I've heard actually on these calls. I've had to actually go about and actually shift beliefs, but really getting to the root of what's actually causing people to experience this.
Well, Damien, I'm with you. I don't want to add that I do think that's one of the most vital parts, and I put that as a slide in my full-day program. It's because people can – the information is only effective as a person using the information, okay? And I can teach my students the most amazing persuasion information, yet if they don't identify as the kind of person who can be persuasive, then the information doesn't really work for them. And when it comes to persuasion and influence, I hear all these motivational speakers talking about be positive, change what you do, change what – well, you know what? You can change what you do and change what you do, but it's going to be work because until you change the identity, nothing else changes. And then I could say in the positive, when you change the identity, everything else changes for you. So please, you know, people listening, that is just so vital that they get that one thing today. That is a huge nugget is I am blank, whatever you want to be.
Great. Awesome answer. Okay, this one actually comes from Julie in the United Kingdom. And Julie asks, how do I apply what you are going to teach us spontaneously, naturally, and phenomenally effectively in a fast-paced, unpredictable interaction, conversation, or indeed world?
You know, what's interesting, Damien, is that people tell me who they are based upon exactly the way that they ask questions, okay? So it's interesting to me that Julie says, how do I spontaneously apply this? And the second part of her sentence is, in an unpredictable interaction conversation world, fast. So I'm getting that Julie wants to be able to move fast, fast, fast. Yeah. And you know, what's interesting about the world is that it does move really fast. You know, we get massive amounts of information thrown at us daily. The way that she can apply it instantly when she learns the techniques is simple. Just use them. Years ago, when I was at the Hypnosis Institute back in the mid-90s, and I just started learning hypnosis, one of our students, a couple of years later when I was helping teach, one of the students said to my boss, "Hey, how come Jim is so good at hypnosis?" And this is what my boss said. I didn't know what he was going to say. This is what he said. He said, "Oh, it's easy, because he does it." My whole point is that many people learn things, I don't care what it is, real estate investing or stock investing or persuasion or influence or whatever it is, many people learn things, yet they're afraid to go out and do it. Make sense? So the way to apply it is just go do it. The way to apply what we're talking about today, Julie, is to go out and say, you know what? When you're talking about features and benefits, you never say, "Well, I'm going to show you the features and benefits." You say, just imagine, and then have them imagine all those features and benefits and already having them. That's using the information right away and spontaneously when you do something like that. Make sense?
Awesome. Great answer. Great answer.
Good. I have a habit of also saying make sense. I'm always checking in to make sure people are with me.
Absolutely. Okay, this next one's from Lucille in South Africa.
Okay.
And she says, "Yes, sometimes I fail to persuade even when it's meant to benefit the person I am aiming to get to take action. How do I get past this?"
I love that question. She says, you know, how do I persuade people even when it's meant to benefit them? Something I learned years ago, Damien, is that, you know what, you can't persuade everyone. And my program, you know, what's interesting for me, what turns me off is a lot of internet marketing programs, they'll say, "Oh, this will work for everyone," or "This will do something." No, that's not true. My persuasion program is designed to move people who are already in the process of moving with you. You know, if you've converted them over to a prospect, I can help you move them a lot quicker. When it comes to moving everyone, you're never going to move everyone. And she talks about, well, you know, how can I, you know, move them when it's a benefit to them? Sometimes you can't. Sometimes no matter what you do, no matter how much dynamite you light and throw at them, they're not going to move. Many times people will not do things to spite themselves. Does that make sense?
Mm.
And also, this is something that's vital that people get this. People only do what's important to them. And if they're not moving, even though it's a benefit to them, what she has not done is she has not made it a high enough criteria, or she has not made it important enough in their mind for them to understand that they must move. Make sense?
Absolutely.
One more thing. Let me interject here really quickly. One thing that I do, and this is I'm a little reluctant to say this, what I'll do with a lot of people, because I know that I can be of service by doing this. When I want to move people a lot of times and they're not moving, my whole program is about helping people increase their income, increase their conversion ratio. And, you know, we're looking at a global crisis, you know, the last year or so, right? People need to make more money. What I do is I'll put people in pain for not acting, and then I turn up the pain, because as you probably know, people move from pain to pleasure. So when I want them to move and I know it's in their best interest, I will actually identify the pain. And in traditional sales training, you hear things like, well, you know, identify their pain spots. Okay, so I identify the pain spot, and then I turn it way up because I know that pain is going to move people. Then I break the state because I do not want them to associate the pain to me. I'll break the state by just segueing, talking about something. Hey, look outside. It's a beautiful day today. I break the state, and then I start talking about solution. So if you want to move people, please use it ethically. But turn up the pain on them, and that will move people from where they are to where you want them to go.
Absolutely. I have lots of coach friends that actually are very good at actually finding pain points when people are sort of sitting on the fence, and there's part of them that wants to move, and there's part of them that wants to actually hold them back. And they've had some really great results with, I guess, just understanding that we, as human beings, we're motivated by both pleasure and pain, and just knowing at which particular time to focus on either of those things.
Well, pain will always move people first, okay? That's actually, research has demonstrated that, and if you look out in the world, you'll see that's true. Pain moves people first. What I say here, and a caveat is please use this ethically. I was at a training several years ago, and he was he worked in a similar field as I. And some people said, you know, we really can't afford to go to your next level of training, which was $5,000. And I heard this person putting them in pain to get them to go to the next training. Now, whether or not they could afford it was a purely subjective thing. You know, I don't know if they could or they couldn't, okay? But the point is use the information ethically. I just think that is so vital as to what's your intent. You know, do you hold the person's best interest at heart? So use pain, certainly. Use it ethically. You will get results. You'll move people right away with pain.
Cool. Now, we're actually approaching the end of our hour, Jim, and I just wanted to say that look, I've taken a ton of notes over the past 50 minutes and have made some real breakthroughs just in my own understanding of persuasion and how the mind works. And I have no doubt that people listening into this call this evening and also people who will actually listen back to the recording will have similar kinds of experiences. And I was just wondering for people who are curious how they can actually find out about your work and how they can actually stay in touch, and also if there are any programs that you offer that people may be able to participate in the future.
Sure, a couple of things. First, go to my website, which is www.mindauthority.com, www.mindauthority.com, and that's a great way to follow me. This whole product, my program called Zero Effort Selling. The reason it's called Zero Effort Selling is because when you know a person's unconscious playbook, it's zero effort to influence them unconsciously. So my program, Zero Effort Selling, is only here in Dallas right now, yet it will be available for download on my website next week. The entire 8-hour program will be available on audio with an accompanying PDF, which is actually, it'll be the same curriculum that I teach in the full-day class. The only difference is there won't be role play because obviously it's an audio, yet you can get the entire program on the website. Also, follow me on Facebook. My name is Jim Fortin, J-I-M-F-O-R-T-I-N. Follow me on Facebook. That's another way. And to start learning more about neuropersuasion, go to my website. And on the left-hand side, you can download an ebook. And it's the 10 biggest mistakes that people make when it comes to persuasion and influence. And I also want to point something out there, Damien. You know, most internet sites, you go to a site and it says if you want information, enter your information, and then they send you the information, right? They're collecting your email address.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually reverse of the reciprocity principle created by Cialdini. So what I find interesting is that so many internet marketers will use Cialdini's principles, yet they violate the first one. What they'll do is they'll say, hey, you know, give me your email address and I'll give you something back. When you go to my website, it says click here, no opt-in required. I'm giving you something before I'm asking you for something. And I just had a student last month that said, you know, Jim, the reason I came to your class is because you gave me something before you ask me for something. So I just wanted to point that out, you know, demonstrating one of the principles there. But there's information on my website, and then you can opt in if you want five of what I call hypnotic closing lines, my favorite neuropersuasion closing lines. You can opt in and get those. Follow me on Facebook, again, Jim Fortin, and I actually put tips up all day long on Facebook. And then product. Like I said, product's out next week.
Awesome. And we will be actually making people aware of that in the upcoming sensational newsletters as well.
Yeah, and you know, for my site, email me. I'll do whatever I can to help people anywhere. Just email me and let me know.
Awesome. Now, one thing that I do like to ask speakers from time to time is particularly when they're actually sharing their message to a global audience, is there anywhere in the world that you would actually love to travel to actually share your work, Jim?
Damien, I love travel. I love to travel. So if I've got, you know, we've got anyone on the phone right now in Australia, actually some people are talking about doing, putting together a program in Australia. You know, what I'd like to do is if someone wants to talk, you know, in South Africa or the UK or Australia or somewhere, you know, contact me. We'll talk about putting a small program together enough to, you know, cover my expenses and get me out there and I can deliver the full day program. In the States here, that's generally, you know, which would minimally cover my expenses, but it's a good start, you know, different venues in the world would be 10 people in a full day program. Yeah, I'd love to come into the UK or South Africa or Australia or anywhere for that matter. I love to travel. I tell people that Dallas is hot, flat, and boring. So anywhere else sounds like fun to me. Yeah, and I welcome all requests, all opportunities. You know, email me. You can find me on my website. Email me. Whatever I can do to be of service, let me know, and I'll do what I can.
And I was also just wondering, Jim, what's next for you? Like, you've accomplished so much in your career and also in helping other people. I was just wondering what's next for you in your career.
Thanks for asking. What I'd like to do is take this program and literally brand it and make it a national brand. our global brand. It's something that's very different. It's very unique. I've had my students say, Jim, I've been to every sales training in the world. Yours is different. Well, Damien, I don't think there's anything new in the world. I really don't. It's just a matter of seeing things with different eyes, seeing things in a different way, tweaking things, making things faster, quicker, and, all that kind of stuff. What I've done is I've taken the neuropersuasion, Cialdini's research of neuroresearch and NLP and hypnotic language patterns, and made a one-day course that there's nothing like it. So my goal is to get this out to as many people as I possibly can so that they can improve their lot in life. And for me, I'm not so much a motivator as I am an educator, yet I know if I give people, this skill set, it will make a difference in their life. So the only thing that I have on my plate right now is growing this program as much as I possibly can, and in getting it into as many people's hands as I possibly can, however I need to do that. Single focus right now. The old Chinese proverb, you chase two hares, you catch neither. I'm after one hare right now, and that's growing zero effort selling.
Awesome. Well, Jim, I just really wanted to take this opportunity to thank you wholeheartedly for devoting such a big part of your life to actually mastering this field, and not only mastering it, but actually really extending it and actually creating a field all of your own. It's certainly been incredibly invaluable for me this evening, and I hope you continued success in actually reaching out and actually sharing these principles with the world.
Thank you, and I know that I will, Damien. I certainly appreciate your heartfelt appreciation, and I appreciate you inviting me on the program, letting me share these things with your listeners and people that you know. And people listening, come connect with me on Facebook. Let's talk, let's build a relationship, and let's see what I can do to serve. And Damien, whatever I can do to be of value to you, please let me know in the future. And I appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Jim. And I've just got one actual final question to finish this off this evening. And that question is for anyone sitting at home wondering whether they've actually got it inside of them to master the art of persuasion. I was just wondering if you could actually share some final thoughts for people in that position.
Anyone can become stronger at what they do first, okay? I had a student back almost a year ago, and this guy had horrible interpersonal skills. I mean, the thing was is he had no self-awareness that he had horrible interpersonal skills. And after he took my course, he goes, Jim, I increased my skill set, and I increased my income. Well, he said, I increased my income by 100%. Well, the thing was is, my thinking was it really didn't have anywhere to go but up. So, I helped him, but the guy needed a lot of help. And, I look at this individual who was a wonderful person thinking, okay, this guy's not very personable. He didn't have a lot of charisma about him. Yet he took what I taught him and improved himself in the way that he came across to people and improved the interactions he was having with people and consequently improved his closing ratio. Anyone can learn this information. It's very, very easy. As a matter of fact, in the full-day program, after every module, I'll say, what questions do you have for me? And students never raise their hands. And I'm like, guys, what's up? Where are the questions? And people will say, you broke it down so easily. You broke it down into such small bites that I understand every bit of it. I had a student in a class a couple of months ago. He goes, I've been studying NLP for 15 years. Listening to you for an hour, you make more sense in terms of me understanding it than what I've gotten out of 15 years of all this NLP. So, Damien, I broke it all down into just baby steps for people. Here, this is all you have to do, this one baby step, and just work the baby steps until you master it. But it's very easy, and anyone can learn it. So one final thought on that, though, I go back to is what is your intent when you're meeting with people, because that will have an effect on the energetic effect you have with them. And then, be authentic. Be genuine with people. Vital, because people are picking that up unconsciously. And have fun. That's vital, too.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks very much, Jim. Thank you to everyone at home as well. Your actual active participation in our calls every week really do make this whole experience a very enriching one for everyone that has actually connects with it. So thank you to everyone at home. This call will be made available tomorrow on the peopleyoushouldmeet.com site for free. And I do urge you, if you feel this information can actually change the life of friends, colleagues, by all means, take that step forward and do share it, because that's what it's there for. Great. So thanks, everyone. Thanks again, Jim. And I bid you all good evening.
Thank you, Damien. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.